You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, October 10th, and you're listening to me, Grandpa Dan, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I know what you're all thinking. You're thinking, what the heck? There's not usually a Tuesday edition of the Daily Nationalist. What's GPD up to? Well, I wanted to do this show as kind of a last-minute thing. I am actually, amazingly enough, recording this like basically minutes, maybe an hour or so before it's going to be due to go up here on the site. Because I wanted to talk about this whole thing of Israel being at war with Hamas. Now, obviously, I recorded my Parish of the Patriots show on Saturday mornings. Most of y'all regular listeners of that show know that I usually record on the weekend for that show. And I'll go ahead and give you, obviously, normally this would be covered by Dr. Johnson, and I'm sure he is going to do that. However, spoiler alert, he's got his Thursday show was already done when all this flared up. So his Thursday Daily Nationalist, which is, again, usually where these sort of geopolitical things will be tackled, you know, it was already done when this came up and he has prior engagements. And I don't want to just wait to talk about this and not say anything at all. We like to stay on the cutting edge here at Radio Albion. So the good news is we are going to talk about this today and in some context with it. The bad news is you're just getting my opinion, which is just my opinion. I don't claim to be an expert on these topics. You're just getting my view of it and in my big picture view of it. I think I'm getting a pretty good handle on it, if I do say so myself. However, again, I'm sure Dr. Johnson is going to address this at the nearest possible time. So I want to get into this, and I'm going to use some reference articles here because this is, of course, the Daily Nationalist. And one of the things I'm going to use as a reference chiefly is an opinion piece by Paul Craig Roberts about this Hamas attack on Israel. Now, I'm going to get into some other things as well, and I want to start right off with the fact that, you know, a lot of times we know the media lies to us constantly. But if you pay attention and you listen, you can get some truth in there. They will spice it up. Sometimes, I don't know, it's like they will tell you things almost like, you know, they get off on just basically saying it to your face. As a little background, just to keep this little tidbit in the back of your mind, I've read in several places being widely said in the media that this Hamas attack on Israel is it's Israel's 9/11. And that's being all over the media. It's Israel's 9/11. I read elsewhere where some Israeli official said, this is like the Holocaust. And I think it's important to keep those little factoids in the back of your mind. It's Israel's 9/11, and it's like the Holocaust. Now, the whole narrative here that the Hamas fighters, the way they did this quote-unquote surprise attack, I this is what's centered in the Paul Craig Roberts story that we're going to, or article that we're going to use today, is he too finds this quite curious. Just like 9/11, the entire Mossad intelligence agency somehow just didn't see this coming. One of the things I found funny about this, because I'm somewhat familiar, I go through these phases and I get like obsessed with the idea of doing something. A lot of times I never manage to actually do it. And I've gone through various times where I thought it would be cool to have what I call a paraplane. They're called them paragliders. And what this is a parachute that's basically got a go-kart tied to the bottom of it with a propeller on the back. And you fly around with this parachute. And I've had spells where it's like, I want one of those. So cool. Of course, like everything else, I can't afford it. But it's cool. So I'm relatively familiar with this thing. And they were like, oh, these Hamas fighters, they paraglided in. And I actually saw like a picture of it, and they're not on one of these paraplanes. Let me tell you something. Those things are so slow. I mean, they literally are so slow that you could stand on the ground, just throw rocks at somebody. And yet this guy just going like probably 10 miles an hour over their wall. And nobody on Israel's side noticed this going on. Nobody thought, I mean, you just throw up your, you just pick up your 22 and just with open sights and you could shoot this guy out of this thing. But somehow the entire Israeli border patrol, border protection, military intelligence apparatus, just somehow they couldn't do it. Just caught them totally by surprise. Find this hard to believe. Hamas people came in and of course they're just the media coverage here in the U.S. is unsurprisingly extremely lopsided. You know, all we're hearing about is, you know, all the poor Israelis, the poor Israelis are being victimized. And let me be clear. Let me be 100% clear. The regular run-of-the-mill Israelis there that were just attending a festival that got shot up and drug off to be hostages, they are 100% victims here. They didn't have any say in this. You know, I mean, they're the victims here. Likewise, the regular run-of-the-mill Palestinians are having bombs now dropped on them and buildings completely blown up and collapsed on them and killed. They're the victims here as well. In all military conflicts and all of these conflicts, it's always the regular people that suffer. It's always, and they are the victims. Both sides are the victims. Now, you know, just like with 9/11 here in the U.S., regardless of, you know, you look at these things behind 9/11, and again, you have a very similar narrative of the entire U.S. intelligence apparatus completely somehow magically broke down that day. And you had the dancing Israelis there that were there to film the event, in their words. None of that changes the fact that the people that died in those buildings are victims. They are the victims here. The people that were killed are the victims. The people that responded and have died of all these weird radiation-related type cancers, they are the victims. So there's no sit here and minimize that there's suffering going on. Now, one of the contexts I see in this, and you know, a lot of times when events like this happen, people who comment on them, such as myself and others that aren't necessarily experts, but they want to get their opinion and they make podcasts and shows and whatever, you know, they'll rush out and want to be the first ones to talk about it. And I don't do that. I don't, you know, I'm making this show today. Events have started unfolding for a minute because I want to get an idea. I want to get an idea of, okay, what's going on? I mean, for instance, I had already recorded yesterday's Daily Nationalist at the end of last week on Friday. You know, I could have just run out and done a new show as soon as all these events started happening and just put that one on the back burner for another day and put a show out yesterday. I like to let some time go by. You run out. People want to run out and be the first one. I want to be at the first podcast talking about this because I want to be one of the first ones to comment on it. That's a good way to wind up with egg on your face. As I said before, look, I don't claim to be an expert. Dr. Johnson is our resident expert here, and I'm sure I look forward to hearing his hot takes on all of this. But again, I don't want to let too much time go by. And we've had a few days, and I think I'm starting to get a pretty good idea now of what we see going on. And I want to lay that out before we get into our printed pieces about this. Just trying to lay the idea down, the background idea, way I'm seeing how all of this is playing out. Now, to everybody, all of you watching, myself, regular people, and we know that the American empire is collapsing. I mean, this thing is coming apart. We know it's on a clock. We do. Well, look, if we know it, all of these other people know it too. Rich and powerful people, governments, everything else, they know this too. This is not like it's a secret. It's pretty obvious and it's pretty clear. Now, you have people with different agendas. A lot of times, especially, you know, when it comes to talking about the Jews, we get this idea that they are, you know, this 100% completely monolithic entity that has one driven agenda. And this is not the case. I mean, look, yes, they do things as an in, with an in-group mindset to what they perceive as what's best for their in-group, which is the Jews, which, by the way, would be real nice if white people did that too, but I don't want to get off on that topic. But the thing is, you get into this idea that, you know, nobody is, everybody's going to have a different view of what is best for the Jews. Just as an example, let's say you took a bunch of Germans, you know, so we don't just get centered on the Jews here. Let's say you took a bunch of Germans, a bunch of white German men, and I'm going to say men specifically, because if you threw half of them or women in there, they would just take their time to invent some sort of relationship drama. So let's say you took a group of 50 German men and you put them, shipwrecked them on a deserted island. Like I say, we're saying men, because even though you're on a deserted island, if it was 25 women, they would be spending the entire time worrying about how their hair looks and generating some sort of relationship drama. You got 50 German men and you put them. Okay, everybody is going to have to work together to survive on this deserted island. We got to have food. We got to have shelter. We've got to do these things. You have these pressing things that you've got to do up front. And everybody's going to work together towards these goals. You're going to find a way to build some shelter. We got to have shelter. They're going to find a way to secure food. They're going to find a way to secure fresh water. However, after they get those things secured, what do we do next? Well, you're inevitably going to wind up with one faction that says, well, we need to do this next. This needs to be our next priority. And you're going to have another faction that says, no, we need to do this other priority. And then you're going to have competing ideas. And both ideas might be the, you know, something that needs to be done. It's just a matter of priority. So you have a monolithic group in the sense that they're all trying to do what's best for their 50 group, their group, which is in this case, are the 50 people stuck on a deserted island. But you're going to have a different opinion of what is the best thing to do for the group is. Well, it's silly not to think that for the Jews, it's not the same way. I mean, they're going to be a different opinion of what's best for the Jews. Now, Dr. Johnson has spoken on several occasions about the New Khazaria Project, which is basically, as I understand it, and again, if I get something wrong, look, I'm just a regular guy. Dr. Johnson's our expert here, and I defer to our expert. But there's a faction of Jews, of Zionists, that look at Israel and they're like, this is not sustainable because of where it's located, which, by the way, back before it was ever established, there were Zionists that were like, we shouldn't build it here. But they wound up, they lost out, and that's where it got built. Anyway, they look at Israel and they're like, because of where it's located, because of all these other factors, it's not sustainable. So they want to build a new Khazaria, which is basically another Israel, and guess where? Ukraine, basically in the Ukraine. That is a real thing. Well, of course, and then now you have, you know, Israel, which has been there for a minute. Now, you have two groups of Zionists here in this situation that have, they're both working for what is viewed as what's best for their group, but they have an opposing view. Now, if you look at the Ukraine project in that context, and you look at it this way, they're clearing the Ukraine out. They are ethnically cleansing the Ukraine without directly ethnically cleansing the Ukraine. You know, they're not allowing anybody to leave, you know, any men to leave. The women are fleeing. They're not allowing any men to leave. They all got to go fight. Of course, they instituted that after all of the Jews were allowed to leave. Then they locked it down, said nobody else is allowed to leave. And they're forcing these people to go just get killed by the Russians on the line. So you have this group that thinks the best thing to do is the Ukraine project. Now, that's all well and good, but the other group of Zionists here, namely the ones that are in Israel, well, they're not going to agree with that. You know, they're not going to agree that Israel needs to go on the back burner. We need to focus on this new project. They're going to believe that, no, we need to hold what we've got here. Now, both sides know, just as you know, just as I know, that the American empire, the golem of a USA, is on a clock. And the time is quickly running out. You read all these stories about, you know, they're running out of ammunition. Well, we're running out of shells. We're running out of this. The economy is going downhill quick. The social cohesion is non-existent. You know, every symbol, every sign that could be a red flag is waving in red alert that the U.S. is on a timer here. It's on a clock. The golem of the useful USA there's not going to be much time here. If this was the USA of, say, 50, 60 years ago, yeah, they could say, well, we can work on this project while also doing this. But it can't do that because this thing doesn't have much more time to be useful. So while you have this one group of Zionists that wants to promote the new Khazari idea, this Ukraine project, which is going to be directly related to the Ukraine project, you've got the Israeli Zionists that want the USA to go ahead and wipe their enemies out. Namely, they want Iran taken out. And you're going to have, you're seeing, I think, this competing, this competing for USA usefulness. Everybody, you know, a lot of people in the U.S. are really getting tired of funding the Ukraine. The Republican Team R has been making a scene about, you know, getting tired of funding the Ukraine and part of our political theater here. I want to read a little blurb out of an RT article, and I'll try to remember to put the link in as well. And the title of this article is White House Hopes to Merge Ukraine and Israeli Aid. And a little blurb I want to read here says, though President Joe Biden had already announced that military assistance was on its way to Israel following a surprise attack by Palestinian militants over the weekend, the White House has signaled that it would soon ask Congress to approve additional aid for the Jewish state. Lawmakers in both parties and senior administration officials have hinted that the aid package could also include provisions for Ukraine, unnamed sources told the Washington Post, NBC News, and other outlets on Monday. Though no final decision had been made, one anonymous official told the Post that the move would be wise because it, quote, jams the far right, referring to Republicans who vocally support Israel but are skeptical of continued aid to Ukraine. And this is what amounts to political theater in the U.S. Our Congress, our Team R and Team D, they're having an argument on just how much money we're going to send to whichever Jewish faction that we're talking about here. The faction wants the new Khazaria project in Ukraine, or our current faction of Israel. It's not a question of if, it's how much and in what priority. So we are literally seeing a competition for U.S. resources by these different Zionist factions. It's just an amazing thing to watch. Now, getting down to what's supposed to be our topic for the day, but I think it's important to put that background down, that we see this happening. And this Israeli thing with Hamas is basically de facto in competition with the other Zionist project in Ukraine. They're competing again. You have to remember, I mean, the USA is on the way out. It's only going to be useful for so much longer. They don't care. Look, they don't care if the U.S. is going to wind up a dried out husk, basically a decayed corpse laying there rotting when they're done with it. That's not the point. The point is to wring as much usefulness out of it before it dies. So you got this competition. Our politicians aren't talking about, well, is this any of our business? They're talking about, well, how much, and can we go ahead and fund this other group? And you got to, I imagine their phones are all ringing off the roll. How much money are you going to give us here in Israel? How much money are you going to give us for our Ukraine project? Well, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And all the while, they're borrowing the money from basically what amounts to the same people at interest. It's our democracy, values of who we are. I want to get into this Paul Craig Roberts piece. And because he gets into a lot of what myself and I'm sure many others have seen. So let's get right into it. I don't know if I'm going to go through the whole thing or not. It's all pretty good and it's not super long. So I'm going to do my best probably to try to get through the whole thing. Paul Craig Roberts writes, I'm being asked about the Israeli-Palestine conflict, which seems to be taking attention away from the Ukraine-Russia conflict. People, by which I mean people who pay attention, are wondering why the Palestinians would attack Israel like this, as it provides Netanyahu with an excuse to grab the remaining bits of Palestine and destroy the Gaza Strip, thus disposing of the two-state solution by conquest. Who can blame Israel after Palestinians killed Israelis and took hostages? I've heard the official explanation of Palestinian perfidy, but I don't have an explanation for the attack. It seems it would have to be more than perfidy. I do agree with readers that it seems a curious thing for Hamas to do as it plays into Israel's hands. I also agree that there's something else strange about the attack. How did drones and so many rockets allegedly from Iran, and some say Ukraine, get into the Gaza Strip? And how did the Hamas attackers get into Israel? Now look, obviously, the Palestinians have plenty of right to be grieved. Of course, like I said, the U.S., the media coverage here in the U.S. has been lopsided, to say the least. You know, they act like, well, the Palestinians just, you know, they're just not really happy about things. But they never get into this. They talk about these Israeli settlements. And I've seen it presented in a manner of, well, there's just this empty land out there. And then the virtuous Jews, the virtuous Israelis, you see, they come into this just desert, just nothing there land, and they build a thriving settlement. Then the Palestinians show up, and they're jealous of the Israelis, and they just start hating them for no reason because they're jealous, because they're stupid. When in reality, these settlements are a situation where the Israelis come in and you have, say, homes or a farm or whatever has been owned by these Palestinians for years, sometimes generations, and they come and say, well, this is ours now. We're going to bulldoze your house. And if they resist, they just kill them. That's the reality of these so-called Israeli settlements. Well, of course, somebody comes and bulldozes your house and kills your grandpa, you're not going to like them very much. But see, they never tell this side of the story. As is everything in the U.S., everything is sports ball. Everything in the media, every narrative is a Marvel Comics film, is a sports ball narrative. And what I mean by that is Americans have to have some sort of, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. That's why you see these ridiculous narratives about, you know, evil Hamas just come in here and just slaughter these innocent Israelis for no reason. And they are the evil bad guys just doing evil for evil's sake. And the honest and virtuous Israelis are just trying to defend their only democracy in the Middle East from these evil brown people. Because you see, the racism angle doesn't count when Israel's involved. Now, again, this is stupid, but this is the narrative that has to be presented to the American people. They have to know which team they're supposed to root for. They don't care. They don't want to know about details. Obviously, you do because you listen to this show. You listen to Radio Albion. But I'm talking about the average person out here in the U.S. They just want to know, which is my team? Which team do I cheer for? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? They can't get off into, well, there's a little more to that. You know, as I said earlier, look, the regular people that are being killed, the Israelis, the Jews that were out there just having a festival, and these Hamas guys show up and start gunning them down and kidnapping them, they're victims. I'm not making light of that at all. But as I said already, the Palestinians are sitting there living in their apartment. They get a bomb dropped on it because they're going to get ethnically cleansed now out of the Gaza Strip. They're victims too. I'm sorry, the world does not work like a damn sports ball game. There are going to be other factors. There are going to be other things. In a case of war, the regular people that are trying to go about their lives are always going to be the victims. That is the one commonality that war always has, is always present in war. I see people, they try to do the same thing with the Russian, especially when it first began. If people try to draw up sides, which team are you cheering for? Are you cheering for Russia or are you cheering for the Ukraine? As if it's a damn sports ball game. And of course, at the end of the day, the regular guys that are forced out there to go die, they're the victims. You know, the people that get their houses bombed by whichever side are the victims. The people that really just wish they could go about their lives normally and maybe make a little better life for themselves and their kids, they're always the one that pays. The people that get to sit up in the office and handle the big money and profit from these things, they're always doing just fine. It's the regular people that suffer. Let's get back to this article here. The Hamas attack has something of 9/11's favor. And again, in the media, they're saying this. This is one of the selling lines. This is one of the sports ball selling line narratives, is that this is Israel's 9/11. And again, I would say that there's more truth to that than first sees the eye. If you're just some sort of NPC bot person, which you're not because you listen to Radio Albion, but if you're one of these NPC bot people that just believes everything that you're told by the media, that's not going to make any sense to you. But assuming you're not, and I assume you're not, you think of that. This is Israel's version of 9/11. Just as every aspect of the U.S. national security state failed simultaneously on September 11, 2001, Israel's security system, including the Iron Dome and the U.S. constructed for Israel, simultaneously failed. Mysteriously, the Hamas fighters entered Israel on the ground and through the air and on the sea without being detected. Mysteriously, large quantities of weapons entered Palestine through Israel without being detected. This is too much. This is too much convenient failure to be believable. It will be interesting to see if anyone in Israel is held accountable for the total security failure. In the U.S., no one was held accountable for the security failures on September 11th, which should have told us a lot. Not knowing, we can but speculate. We have a motive. Israel can now steal the rest of Palestine. Another motive might be that Israel can expand the conflict into a wider war, succeed this time in grabbing the water resources of southern Lebanon. It could even get nastier with Israeli motives against Syria and Iran. Oil prices could go sky high, causing world disruption. A victorious war and the end of the Palestinian problem would free Netanyahu from his legal and political problems. There's a lot to think about. And I really think the Iran angle is a lot of what's going on. I do think it's a two-pronged or a multi-pronged rather strategy. Again, just in my opinion. As he says, this is their chance to go ahead and just really ethnically cleanse out the Palestinians. But I think it's a matter of where we're going to use the U.S. with what time we have left. And I do. I think there's going to, my opinion at this stage of the game could change. My opinion at this stage of the game, they're really going to try to push this war with Iran. And I think they're going to try to drag the U.S. into it. We'll see what happens. But I think that is a very real possibility. But let's move on to the security failure that made the attacks possible. Why would Netanyahu enable Hamas to attack Israel by standing down Israeli security? It seems a nonsensical suggestion, but isn't, as it creates the conditions in which Israel can absorb all that remains of Palestine, just as 9/11 created the conditions for the neoconservatives to launch the wars they had planned in the Middle East. And we know who the neoconservatives are. We keep coming back to it's basically we're talking about the same people. The difficult question is, why would the Palestinians bring on their own destruction by attacking Israel when Hamas has no prospect of defeating Israel? Again, we can only speculate. It could be an Israeli operation from start to finish. Israel infiltrates Hamas, just as the FBI infiltrates Trump supporters and patriotic groups now called domestic terrorists. The Israeli agents play up Israel's abuse of the Palestinians. Netanyahu helps them along by blowing up the sacred mosque. The agents come up with an attack plan made possible with weapons from Iran and devices from Iran to jam Israeli security. They go about this carefully, relying on the decades of anger and hurt and the prospect of release from impotence to crowd out Hamas reason. I don't say these speculations suffice as an explanation, but I would not be surprised if these speculations, if investigated, would be proved to be closer to the truth than whatever official narrative emerges. And I agree with this assessment. Those of you who listen to my show know one of my favorite sayings is there's no such thing as coincidence, just plans other people make that they don't tell you about. We got a whole lot of coincidence stacking up here, and they're openly marketing this as Israel's 9/11. And I think there's a certain amount of truth there to that. I do think the more concerning angle is that they're going to try to use this to drag the U.S. into a war with Iran or a direct war with Iran and Syria. I can't help but to see that as part of the agenda there. What's happening to the Palestinians is awful and a tragedy, but I'm going to sit here and pretend I'm really too worried about that because it doesn't affect me. It's not my people. I'm not trying to be cold-hearted, but this running around acting like you're going to be emotional about people you don't know is just kind of silly. I've already said that it's, you know, there's victims all around here. And yeah, it's a sad thing for those victims. But in the bigger picture, I think the more concerning thing is that you're going to be looking at a wider war. They're going to try to suck the U.S. into a war with Iran and Syria. I see this escalating that purpose, because it's very easy for them to do. Look, all Israel has to do is attack Iran, and Iran, of course, is going to fight back. And then the Israelis will sit here and say, oh, hey, we're being victimized by the Iranians. Get in here, Uncle Sam, and get to it. You know, we might even get treated to an Iranian terrorist attack. Just so happens to happen in the U.S. There's any number of ways that this could go about to get the U.S. sucked into this. Of course, one of the things that I think is going to be ultimately combating that is you're going to have this other Zionist faction that wants everything focused on the Ukraine project, on the new Khazaria project. And they're going to be like, no, 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 you can't. Because if you suck the U.S. in to Iran and Syria, then the U.S. is going to be forced to abandon the Ukraine project. I mean, they can try to delegate that to their European vassal states, but it's not going to be the same thing. So I think you're going to have this competition. You're going to continue to see this competition between these competing Zionist factions of where to use what's left of the golem before it collapses. The Ukraine project, or to secure the Israel base in the Middle East. And of course, as always the case with the democracy, we don't have a say in it. We got all our own problems. We'd really like our government to be addressing these multitude of problems we have here. But you see, that's not even in the conversation. Timur is running out there, getting down on their face, you know, and slobbering around about Israel. And Team D is running around out here talking about the most important thing in the world is the Ukraine. Which of this faction of the same group are we going to throw ourselves down for? They never talk about us. They never talk about our problems. You know, they're supposed to be, it's supposed to be our government. Who believes that anymore? I mean, who can even believe that anymore? All they talk about is which of these Zionist factions that we need to give the most money more for and ultimately probably go to war on behalf of. Now, from a practical standpoint, if that figures into it, it's probably going to just come down to which faction owns the most politicians. We're going to find out. We're going to find out if the Israeli faction owns more politicians and political power in the U.S. or the Ukraine New Khazaria faction, if they own more politicians and control more political power in the U.S. We're going to find that out. Now, on a practical matter, the Iran-Syria going there directly is going to be more tempting because they don't have nukes. So, you know, that's going to probably be an easier thing to bite off than going to war directly with Russia. Of course, that's discounting the fact that that's assuming that Russia's just going to sit on their hands through this conflict. As I've said for a while now, World War III is already going on. Every nation in the world is picking a side, and all of this has to be viewed in the context. None of this is happening in a vacuum. It has to be viewed in the context that World War III is happening. It's been happening for a minute now. Every nation in the world is picking a side, and all of these different maneuverings are a part of that. So I think it's silly of them to assume that if they go ahead and just write off the Ukraine and push all in on Iran and Syria, that Russia is going to say, well, we dodged that, and just wipe their hands clean and go on. Especially as I theorized on a recent show, that Russia simply decided a long time ago that military confrontation with NATO is inevitable. If they have decided that, which I have a feeling they did, they have decided that some time back. If that is the case, then the U.S. writing off Ukraine and going off to fight Iran and Syria on behalf of the Israel faction, there's no reason for Russia not to make a move and go ahead and collapse NATO. And as I said then, and I'm sorry, off the top of my head, I don't remember which show I said it on, they all start running together. It doesn't mean they're going to invade. When I say that, it doesn't mean they're going to invade Europe. All they've got to do is pick one of these, like, almost non-countries, these little tiny countries that are technically members of NATO. All they got to do is roll in there in an afternoon, and when the government's screaming Article 5, Article 5, and the U.S. is like, no, we ain't got time for no Article 5 for some little pretend country in the Baltics. You just it's not going to happen. No, we can't. You're just on your own. then everybody else in Europe that's been depending on NATO is going to see that that isn't any protection for them, and NATO is going to fall apart, and these countries quite likely go back to just trying to negotiate their own individual deals with Russia. But that's a topic for a different day. Thank you for joining. Again, we all look forward to Dr. Johnson's analysis of this, and I know we are going to get that. Again, though, this is the only way it was going to get done this week, so you just got to settle. Just got to settle for my humble opinion. I think I'm probably pretty right. Paul Craig Roberts agrees with me for the most part, and he's a lot smarter than me. He's got a lot more, you know, connections and more in the know than I am. It's just an angle, of course, you're not going to get on the media anywhere here in the West or in the U.S. You're just going to get this ridiculous sports ball hype. So I thank you for joining me for the special Tuesday edition of the Daily Nationalist. Think of it as a bonus treat, an extra Daily Nationalist. Thank you for joining me for this. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.